if you're programmed multiple, you can function at many different levels, and you can have one personality that's in this coven and another personality that's in that coven, and this personality that's in the Masonic Lodge, and this personality that participates in this hierarchy ceremony, and another personality that participates in another satanic ritual. It's very broken up. So one of the reasons why it's not easy to answer your question is basically everything we understood about human behavior and how to gauge or judge people is obsolete, because the mind control, by creating programmed multiple personalities, has made all of our ways of judging people obsolete. And so a person within the Illuminati, the supreme goal of somebody in the Illuminati is to balance their good deeds with their bad deeds. They're dualists. They're Luciferians at the highest level. And that's why your greatest philanthropist will very often be your highest ranking Satanist, because what they're trying to do with their philanthropy, which a lot of their philanthropy is self-serving, when you actually look at it, it's not as generous as it appears at first, but they're trying to do good deeds and then balance those with their bad deeds, because they believe in balance in their religion. It's a Gnostic Luciferianism.
Mm-hmm. And I think it might be difficult for people listening to understand how somebody can be in public doing good deeds and having a good public image, and at the same time having this very dark side. But I don't know if you've read the recent Judith Spencer's book, Satan's High Priest, but it really illustrates how that works very clearly in this. It's a true story about one particular satanic cult high priest and his rise to that. Have you had a chance to see that book? Or
no, I haven't. But I'm glad that you brought that out to the listeners. The way that someone can begin to see the Illuminati is to start looking at how these people are above the wars and the rest of what we have to suffer. For instance, Pierre Samuel DuPont, who was the first famous DuPont, during the French Revolution, all kinds of people around Pierre lost their heads, and yet, for some strange reason, Samuel DuPont managed to keep his head when so many hundreds of people were losing theirs to the guillotine. The one person that was very influential in protecting him was Necker's daughter, Madame Germaine de Stael, and she ran a cat house, but anyway, she was intimate friends with Saint Simon, and Saint Simon's disciples were saying at that point in time, in the early 1800s, that the target date for their New World Order would be the year 2000. Yeah, they were actually writing that. But another example in history that, and I brought this out in the Top 13 Illuminati Bloodlines book, was that when the United States went to war right after Pearl Harbor, within a few days, President Roosevelt came out with a presidential decree, which was, it was semi-secret amendment to the Trading with the Enemy Act, and it made it legal for certain people to trade with the enemy if they were given permission by the American Secretary of the Treasury, who at that time was Hans Morgenthau. But anyway, I copied the paperwork out of it's the Code of Federal Regulations. I photocopied it off because they actually have this presidential decree that if the Secretary of the Treasury wanted to exempt somebody, he could allow them to trade with the enemy. Well, who were the people that were given that privilege? Rockefellers and Onassis, both of them Illuminati kingpins. If you look, during World War II, essentially every ship that was a Greek merchant ship was sunk during the war by one side or the other. Something happened, and essentially all of the Greek shippers lost their ships, all of their ships. But there was one Greek shipper, and that was Onassis, Aristotle Onassis. He didn't lose a single ship, and his ships sailed through all the war zones. None of the Allies or the Axis powers ever attacked his ships. Now, for something like that to happen, you have to have full collaboration at the highest levels. And when you see these kind of things going on, like with Pierre Samuel DuPont or Aristotle Onassis, then you're looking at somebody who's Illuminati. They sit above all these conflicts that they create for us people, the common people.
So this way of bypassing the trading with the enemy, how has this been utilized in terms of, say, for example, World War II or the Bolshevik Revolution, for that matter?
In fact, there's an entire book out that I think the title of it's Trading with the Enemy, that came out in 1983, which goes and answers your question. But one of the things was that Rockefeller Standard Oil shipped gas and oil to Spain, which then piped it directly to the Nazis. The Allies knew that Rockefeller was supplying the Germans. There are people that say that the gas that the Rockefeller shipped to Spain that was then sent right on to the Nazis, that prolonged the war a couple years. But you don't hear about this by establishment historians. There was a lot of important trading during World War II that was necessary to keep the Nazi war machine, sustain the Nazi war machine. And then you mentioned the Bolshevik Revolution. You'll see that there was a lot of finances sent, as you're probably well aware, and some of the listeners are probably well aware, from Kuhn Leib and company and some of these other Illuminati people, and that money was used by the Bolsheviks to finance the revolution. There were a lot of other agreements made at that time and things done to help them out. So yeah, it's there's a lot going on behind the scenes,
it seems like they're promoting a strategy of tension where they're funding both sides,
mm-hmm.
and basically profiting from the resultant conflicts that they fomenting.
One could go on and on. One looks at, for instance, Heinrich Mueller, who was head of the Gestapo. You will notice that at one point he took an old Jewish family, and he himself had to personally carry their suitcases to his own car, and when he got them to the Swiss border, he carried their suitcases. The Swiss bodyguards were laughing, by the way, seeing the head of the Gestapo helping an old Jewish family escape Nazi Germany. When you start seeing these things, you know, then you're beginning if the listener out there starts seeing these kind of things, now that you've heard me talk, you can begin to realize that there's a hidden level out there way beyond what the common person allowed to see, and this is that Illuminati level. These are the people that are collaborating behind the scenes, where you have Catholics and Protestants and Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormon leaders that you think these people are at each other's throats, But they're key Illuminati people. They're secretly collaborating with each other.
Now, in talking about the Illuminati, I think perhaps a number of people may have difficulty believing that there's a unified global conspiracy to control the world. And even myself, up until recently, until I started researching into the mind control, I thought the Illuminati was a fictitious group. In doing your research about the Illuminati, what were some of the other sources of information besides the people on the inside that had escaped?
Well, my sources besides my eyewitnesses were here. I could give some of the following. In overview, or as trying to answer your question as succinctly as possible, I interviewed a number of honest law enforcement and honest private investigators. In fact, I have some of these people are still ongoing friends of mine. And then over the years, I've done years of research where I've studied thousands of books and thousands of documents, which has even meant that I had to go to special libraries such as the Genealogical Library at Salt Lake City. And then I've interviewed and worked with many therapists, and I've taken off and traveled to sites where programming's done, where rituals are done, and crimes have been committed, and to give an example of that for the listeners is, for instance, in Washington State, a number of hours from here, is a full-scale replica of Stonehenge. And below this replica of Stonehenge, down below, because this sits on a hill, is a cemetery a number of feet away. And Illuminati rituals are done at that cemetery. That's an example of a place that I've gone and looked at for myself. I need to bring in another concept here that's important to research. It's not all simply just getting a lot of interviews and a lot of facts, because the raw facts aren't going to do it. When I was in college and I was taking counseling, the psychiatrist that was psychologist that was teaching the class gave some excellent advice. He said, when you're listening to people or examining a situation, don't look at the details, but look at the process. He said the details may throw you for a loop, because people will lie, they'll give contradictory information and everything. But look at the process. And that's a very good principle. What I've been doing is really, I've been analyzing a lot of raw data, a lot of raw facts, and interview information, and I've been putting together a puzzle, a coherent puzzle. And that means you have to overlook a lot of disinformation.
Now, in the late 70s, there was a certain amount of documentation about CIA mind control that came out to the public. And I'd like to know what you think are the problems inherent in trying to prove the existence of mind control to a general audience through government documentation.
There's the problems with trying to expose things through government documentation are, one, the documentation has been destroyed or tampered with, and to get the government involved in exposing these things, what you're basically doing is asking a bunch of criminals, and that's right, that's what they are, they're criminals, to, even though they work in government positions, they're still criminals. You're asking these criminals to expose themselves with paperwork. That's just not the way things work. If we think about the Nazis, they were trying to destroy all traces to their crimes. They tried, they didn't succeed. So that gives me some hope that even though a great percentage of the proof of the mind control has, in terms of documentation, government documentation, has been destroyed, I'm still convinced that tons of documents still exist. But I think even better than those tons of documents are the living proof we have in the tens of thousands of identified living victims. The other side to the problem of getting government documents is that then you have to have some way to broadcast that to the public at large. And we have a controlled media. And unfortunately, the media is very tight with the government. And you can really question whether we would ever see our controlled media fully expose to the proper degree the people that that need to be exposed.
Yeah, it seems highly unlikely that the mainstream media is going to be investigating this. It's more likely going to be coming from independent investigations and independent publishers of this information.
Right. I'd love to see the places where the records are kept broken into and these records exposed. But the only way that I see that this would sincerely happen would be if there was like a revolution on the magnitude of what happened in Eastern Europe, where Stasi records and things like this were exposed to the light of day.
Do you think a government investigation into the mind control experiments, similar to what has just happened with the Tuskegee syphilis and the radiation experiments, would do would actually bring out information?
I believe it would bring out information. That's true, the way you ask it. However, for the government to investigate this is really like asking the fox to tell us how much of a threat he is to the chickens. And the fox is going to tell us something enough to satisfy us, but I'm real leery about giving the government another chance for them to push some ulterior agenda. And the bottom line is any government investigation is going to cost us more tax dollars. And I think people sometimes forget that every time they send their government scurrying around doing something, that it comes out of their pocketbooks.
Do you think there's any benefit, though, to society as a whole in terms of having a government investigation go on and having the government at least admit that they did do these kind of experiments? Is there any benefit there to the people as a whole in trying to expose this?
As a whole, the way you ask your question is going to reflect the way I answer. You said, as a whole, will this be beneficial for the people?
Mm-hmm.
No, it will not. And the reason why I say that is, if you look at earlier on, the U.S. Congress had Rockefeller investigate the CIA. Rockefeller investigates the CIA. And of course, his investigating committee came up with abuses. Mm. They've got to find something wrong. But the thing of it is it makes Rockefeller look like a good fellow. Oh, look, he's a crusader that's trying to expose the bad guys. They always throw in an ulterior agenda. If they're going to do something that, against themselves, they use it as another opportunity to work on some other agenda.
Mm.
So if they exposed A, B, and C about mind control, then they're probably doing it in a way so that they're misdirecting people's attention from their latest technology to some older method that they've discontinued, or something like that. So they're going to work in some ulterior agenda that, when it's all said and done, it's actually done us a disservice.
Now, how do you think the information about mind control has been kept from public attention for so long?
Well, as we mentioned just a little bit earlier, we've got a controlled media, and in a number of my publications and my writings, I've gone in detail and showed who's in control of the media and how these people are members of the Illuminati or members of, or participating in their Illuminati fronts. And so I document how the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and William Randolph Hearst, who's the Illuminati kingpin, how these people controlled the media. I think it's appropriate to mention a couple anecdotes. I was visiting one day with a Christian minister, and he was asking me what I did, and since I work full time exposing the mind control, work full time at helping victims of the mind control and exposing the New World Order's agenda, I just was honest with him and told him that, and in the course of doing that I mentioned something about a controlled media, and boy, he hit the roof. He went ballistic on me because he, just prior to becoming a minister, had been an ABC reporter, and he said, "There is no control over the media. I was allowed to write and have any stories that I wanted." I said, whoa, hold on, calm down. Let me ask you some questions. I said, when you were hired, the man who was in charge of you, who oversaw you, your superior, he hired you and kept you on because he liked the way you thought, didn't he? And the way you wrote. He says, yes, you're right, he did. And I said, and likewise, you know, his superior liked the way he thought and the way he wrote, and on up the line. I said, if anybody had written or thought in ways that weren't the approved way of thinking and writing, you'd have gotten in trouble, wouldn't you? And he said, yes. I said, that's it. I said, when I work with victims of mind control, they can't see that they're under programming. As long as they do exactly what the programming asks them to do, they don't know that they're in programming. The only time that they know that there's any programming there is if they step out and act against it. It's like if you're running with the wind behind your back, or if you're in a stream and you're floating down the stream, you don't notice the current. But when you try to swim upstream is when you really notice the power of the current. So if you, as a reporter, step out of what their expectations are, that's when you get clobbered and you realize that there's a lot of heavy force behind going the direction that they want to go in. And he said, you're right. I said, if you had written articles that had been contrary to the way your boss thought, you'd been in trouble, wouldn't you? And he said, yes, you're right. And he said, I see your point. So, and that's my point, is people don't notice that the control until they start bucking against that control, and then you find out how much control there is over our entire society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems that control in the newsrooms is almost unspoken level. And often, for a lot of reporters, it's an economic motivation as well. The stories that their editors like do get accepted. The stories that they don't like don't get accepted, and the reporters don't get paid for it. So the reporter very quickly appreciates what their editors are going to accept in print.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, I'd like to talk about the mind control that the Illuminati have used and the techniques therein. What is your understanding of how they have used mind control, and what form of mind control?
The word that I like to use is total mind control, because it totally controls the person's body, soul, and spirit. And the common person out there has never really imagined that something so all-encompassing or so horrendous or so totally powerful as even exists. And the type of mind control that the Illuminati use, when I say mind control, some people think, oh, television, yeah, or they think, oh, yeah, subliminals. No, I'm talking about something that's 1,000 or 10,000 times more powerful. This mind control is totally undetectable, and it totally controls the person, and it uses every known technique of controlling a person wrapped up in a sophisticated group package. And that's one of the important things that a lot of people have not emphasized, is that it's not one technique. What makes this mind control, this total mind control of the Illuminati so powerful, is that it's a sophisticated group package incorporating all of the known techniques of control. All of these methods have been carefully interwoven so that, you know, when you listen to someone from an intelligence agency, occasionally they've talked similar to like this, where they'll say, well, we tried such and such technique, but it only worked in 70% of the cases, so we couldn't use it. And we tried this and this technique, and it only worked part of the time. But what they're not telling you is if you take a method that works only 70% of the time and match that to another technique that works 60% of the time, and another technique which works only 50% of the time, and you have 100 techniques wrapped up together like that, you make a package deal that totally locks the victim in to the control.
So can you talk about some of these techniques individually and how they were used as the group package?
Yeah. When I started out to describe to people what was going on, I had files and files. I had about 150 files of different techniques. And I was thinking to myself, well, I can't talk about 150 techniques. That's too overwhelming for people. And so I thought and I thought and I realized that all of these techniques broke down into 12 sciences. One of the sciences is the science of trauma and torture. Another science is how to use drugs. Apply drugs to control a person, and another science that they have is their ability to use different mental states, which is hypnosis, disassociation, the trance states. Another one of their sciences is their skill at deceiving people and deceiving the victim themselves. One needs to understand, the listener needs to understand, that these victims of Illuminati mind control do not even know themselves that they're under control. So there's a lot of skill in using fiction and deceit and fronts and covers. And there's a science of using spiritual things to control a person. In fact, actually, that is the perhaps one of the major, if not the most major, method of controlling a person.